This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable blade knives, fixed blade knives, and game processing kits. Now, we've all been there before, trying to field dress your wild game with a dull knife. This is where Outdoor Edge really steps in. With the Razor Safe system, you can have a brand new, razor sharp blade with just the push of a button. No more dull blades and no more problems processing your wild game. To check out all of the products from Outdoor Edge, visit OutdoorEdge.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% off of your purchase. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, but you already know that. I am starting to get excited. I've been planning, I've been writing things down on calendars, which means once a hunt goes on the calendar, something big has to happen in order for me to move it. Let's just say, for example, my elk hunt. If I draw my elk hunt this year, it would need to take a miracle of God for me to adjust that, right? I've done all the planning. I've done all the preparation. The dates, for the most part, are set. This is a six or seven year preference point gathering hunt. And it has been planned. The wife knows about it. So the only thing that would really make me have to move that would be like a death or a major emergency in the family. So that is what I'm doing right now. I'm planning. I'm putting things on calendars. My goal this year is to try to get to, hopefully I draw Wyoming. I'm going back to South Dakota. Potential hunt in Missouri. And that's going to be like probably like a 4-day hunt real quick, down and out. And then the rut in Iowa. And depending on if I tag out or when I tag out or whatever happens in Iowa, I could go back to Missouri for another crack at that. But the Missouri hunt is a potential. It's not on the calendar yet. But Wyoming's already on the calendar. What else is on the calendar? South Dakota's on the calendar. Iowa rut hunt on the calendar. And there's an asterisk. And I think it all depends on if I'm able to take my wife on a vacation this summer. So I gotta earn some brownie points at that point. But what are we talking about today? We're talking about a guy out of Michigan. His name is Kevin. I think I'm going to say it right. Kevin Vanderplug. Yeah, Kevin Vanderplug. Dude is a crazy whitetail SOB just like the rest of us, or crazy bow hunter just like the rest of us. He loves to hunt deer. He loves the process. And in this episode, he kind of breaks down his annual strategy. And if you follow me on social media, I've been doing a little scouting already this year. So we kind of break down the process, right? We break down the trail cameras, how he runs trail cameras, how he does his scouting, on multiple farms in multiple states, because the strategy for a farm that is just down the road to scouting a property that is multiple states away is a completely different process, right? Trail cameras play a big role in how he scouts, maybe uses some historical data from previous years. Maybe he has some cell cams. Maybe he is able to, check trail cameras quite often. But he breaks down his entire process on how he has found success throughout the years, not only in a high pressure state like Michigan, but some of the other states that he hunts as well. And I know he killed a great mule deer this year, but I don't know if we get into that. I know it's a heavy whitetail focused podcast, but either way, man, it's an awesome episode. And as you will continue to here, and if you didn't know already, I love breaking down other people's strategies, especially other people who are successful. And one thing that we can all get out of this is there's 1,000 different ways to skin a cat, right? Some guys do it one way and some guys do it completely opposite. And either sometimes they both work. So that's what I'm trying to get out of these conversations, is the ability to think outside the box, the ability to get outside of your comfort zone and take a situation that may not be good and find a way to turn it good. And hopefully it leads to a big old mature buck on the ground. So that's what we're going to be talking about today, but we do have to do a commercial. Today is Wasp and Vortex. Huge fan of Vortex Optics. They're a supporter of this podcast, and it's easy to work with them for a couple reasons. One, the team that they have over there. It's just, I love working with companies who are good, who have good people working for them, whether that is a mom and pop operation or whether it's a bigger company. Either way, I like to work with people who are not 100% focused on selling product. Obviously, they have a business to run, but the people at Vortex not only are knowledgeable, but they care about one thing, and that is your success and how you feel about their products, right? And their VIP warranty really is the exclamation point on that company, man. You buy a product from them, you break it, you damage it, whatever, it gets in a house fire, a bear eats it, you back over it with your truck, you lose in a video game to your kid and you spike it on the floor, you put it in a box, you send it to them, they fix it, and they send it back to you for free. That's how it works. And they have an awesome lineup of spotting scopes. They have an awesome lineup of binoculars, range finders, rifle scopes, red dots. And to be honest with you, I'm really excited about testing out their new tripods this year for my spotting scope. So vortexoptics.com, go check them out. Wasp Archery. Again, another awesome company that has awesome people working for it that care about your success out in the field. And I don't know, man, just talking with Fred Dougherty, one of their engineers and one of the guys who works for the company, you can hear how passionate he is about the material that they use, the fact that some of their heads are made in the USA, the fact that they care what you think, right? It's not just numbers on a piece of paper. They care. They listen to the, you know, they listen to the people who use their products on a daily basis, and they turn that information into new products or redesigns or information to help them cater to the end user, which is you. So I'm a huge fan of the Jackhammer mechanical for whitetails, and my mule deer hunts this year, if I draw my Wyoming tag, I'm going to be using the Boss 4 blade. It's a fixed blade. Huge fan of that head, and just, again, great material, great design, great construction, and it all leads to the very first thing that makes contact with an animal when you're a bow hunter. So huge fan of their heads. If you want to go find out more information, visit wasparchery.com, take a look at your favorite mechanical or fixed blade heads, and then enter the discount code when you decide to purchase. That is 9 fingers, that's the number 9 followed by the word fingers, 2020. So 9 fingers 2020, and that's going to save you 20% on your purchase. Other than that, I say we get into today's episode with Kevin Vanderplug. 3, 2, 1. All right, from Michigan, Mr. Kevin Vanderplug. Kevin, what's up, man?
Man, not much. How you doing, Dan?
It's good, man. I'm, like I said before we started recording, I'm in a real good mood. I went out mushroom hunting, and I don't know about you, if you do any mushroom hunting, but I went out mushroom hunting, and you know, mushrooms grow on the ground, but just the nature of me being out in the woods, I'm looking at terrain features, I'm looking up in the trees, I found myself covering all this ground and not even looking for mushrooms. I found a couple, but I don't want to go back. I'm like, oh, look, check out this, man. This is an awesome trail that comes into this pinch point. The terrain feature leads here. The wind's going to do this and all the thermals and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not even thinking about mushrooms. And I don't know. But I did find a good tree stand location out of the deal. So that's where my mindset is right now.
Me too. I haven't really found any mushrooms. So it just turns into a scouting mission either way. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So, man, I really don't know how to transition into what we're going to talk about today, because I honestly don't have a set plan. But like I said, I just said, we have been out I've been out scouting, right? And I've been, looking at terrain features I go when I find a tree stand location, and then I go to the maps and I try to find an access route to them. Where, like, you hunt in Michigan, right? So are you hunting a lot of private ground in Michigan? Do you hunt a lot of public ground in Michigan? I know you do some out-of-state hunts. So kind of break down the areas that you're hunting for us.
I generally end up hunting a lot of private ground in Michigan. I'm looking for a specific buck. I would just like it to be, Pope and Young or so, or bigger in Michigan. That takes a lot of time, effort, properties. I run a lot of trail cameras. I got a lot of trail cameras on public even, and I'll go there if I have to, but if I got something on private, I'll probably end up hunting there mostly. So
yeah. And that's the same, yep. That's the same thing here in Iowa, man. I got access to public. I have some good, I guess I'll call them backup pieces on public, where if the private that I'm on is overrun, or there's no deer that get me excited, I'll bump down onto some public and start the process, there. But in the past couple of years, I really haven't had to do that. So you mentioned trail cameras though. I want to see how similar your trail camera strategy is to my trail camera strategy. Like, when do you get your trail cameras out? When do you start checking them? When do you start that whole process?
Usually, I don't know, like June or July, somewhere in there, even a little earlier, some properties, whatever I'm feeling like. But yeah, I bought, I stepped up the game a year or so ago. I found a bunch of trail cameras for reasonable, and I stacked them on. I don't know, I probably got 30 trail cameras. So I end up running a lot here and then a lot out of state now too. So,
yeah. So, yeah. Oh, so you're actually making trips out of state to set up some trail cameras?
This year I did. Yeah.
Okay. So first off, in Michigan where you live, how often are you checking the trail cameras once you set them out? Because in Michigan you can't put mineral down, right?
Right. I don't check them very often. I mean, I have some that will be out on the edges of food sources. You can go check those more regular, but if I have anything way back in, I don't check it very often. Once a month, once every 2 months, whatever works,
Yeah. So then once the season gets here, then how often do you start checking them to see if there's a shooter deer and B, if he's killable?
I usually make a good sweep through, right before season opens, if I can, if the wind direction and stuff's good, if I can ease in, try to get a game plan for what's most recent. So I'll do that. And then I usually just don't check them unless I'm going that direction towards a stand, or if it's an easy one or something, but
yeah,
mostly just for inventory for the most part.
So. Yeah. So just like a hypothetical here, it's in season. You go and check your trail cameras and there's a shooter deer on there. Maybe it's nocturnal. I don't know. Maybe it's daylight, whatever. What goes through your mind and the process of how you attack that target animal then?
Well, unfortunately, unless you're using cell cams, all your camera information is already passed. Depending on how many days pass, but it's passed. So
right.
That's why it ends up being mostly inventory purposes. But this first deer I shot this year was fairly regular on trail camera. So, I can honestly say that the trail cameras really helped out with this first buck I shot this year. So I end up checking him fairly often because he was fairly regular and the cameras didn't seem to bother this particular deer. So.
Yeah. So like, walk us through that then. I mean, you had, it sounds to me, you had, a deer on trail camera regularly. What was the steps that you took to put yourself into position to harvest him at that point, or kill him at that point?
Okay. This deer ended up being fairly visible, really close to the property. I could hunt in the bean fields and stuff. A lot of people were seeing him. So I was hoping he was going to stay there. I got a lot of other buddies and neighbors in the area that have pictures of him. So I know he was in the area, but he was still traveling. You know, people a mile away were getting pictures of him. But getting closer to season, he was using the fields and the property that I could hunt.
Yeah.
So what I did, I ended up dropping, he was using the north end of the property a lot. So I ended up dropping a bunch of cameras more on the south end of the property, almost to see if he's not down there. You know, if one of these cameras don't catch him, then he's definitely staying on the north end. I figured I could, I've been hunting this property since I was, you know, 13. So I know the property very well. So I figured I could get a shot at him if he was using it. So I put those cameras there and I went out west in September elk hunting and come back, picked up all my cameras off of public and then grabbed all these cameras. And then he surprised me. He was on the far south end of the property, even though he was acting like he was on the north end. He was coming out the north end all the time, but he was bedding on the far south end of the property. So I started getting a bunch of pictures of him on the south end. So I was really feeling good because that is using the majority of the property that I have to hunt. He's using the entire thing to get to the food. So
yeah. So that's kind of cool though, right? From a strategy standpoint, you got pictures of him, where he's like at the destination he's going to, but then you also have pictures of him coming out of a bedding area or whatever. And so you have this straight, this line, like a potential line that he's traveling, which allows a guy to put himself into position somewhere along that line. You know, once you figured out, you know, his bed and then his food, like how did you make your move in on him to get, you know, between those two?
Well, the funny part is I ended up, he was bedding closer than I thought he was, where I thought he would be bedding. And when I went in to check my cameras, like a couple of days before season, the wind was perfect for me. I know it wasn't blowing to where I thought he was bedding. So I checked the cameras and he was there. Well, I started hunting him right away, October 1st morning. According to the cameras, I should have killed him. And unbeknownst to me, I checked a few of the other cameras over the next day or so. He was bedding closer than I thought. He was bedding watching the access trail. He didn't wind me the first day in to check my cameras. He had to have seen me. He changed his routine a little bit and started using more on the north end of the property for a day or two.
Okay. So he felt that pressure from you come in, right? And so yep. He made an adjustment. Now, was he still on that from where you thought he was bedding to that destination? Was he still on that line, so to speak, just closer to the destination?
No, I think he ended up showing up on a camera that was just in the woods a ways on the very north end. So I think he completely changed his bedding for a couple of days.
Okay.
I didn't really like the second or third day there, the second day probably of season.
All right. So you checked the trail cameras again and they weren't like his pattern had changed, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So how long did it take for you to adjust your strategy to try to get on him again? Was it something quick or did it take like a week or so?
I ended up, he was going past, let's say like two or three cameras within a couple hundred yard span. I ended up hunting him closer to the food source, even though the pictures were kind of like gray light, but I thought I could probably still get a shot. I was trying to tape it. Not that it really matters. I don't tape for anybody or anything, but I was trying to film my hunt. So I was hunting him back in the woods closer to his bedding. So I started hunting closer to the food, and then it was the morning of the third. I was hunting kind of closer to the food, and actually my mom texted me and said that she's seen him out there. So it's at my parents' place, and they can see across the lake and everything. and they said they could see a big buck standing back there, and he headed in the woods not very far from where I was. I actually thought I should have been able to see him, but I didn't. But the where he headed into the woods was way closer than the pictures on the far north end of the property, so I kind of figured he was heading back to get back on the original pattern that he was on.
I got you.
So I must have bumped him off, because I'm telling you, Dan, I could have almost put money on that I should have killed the thing opening morning. I mean, yeah. He was regular.
Yeah. All right. So then what was the next step? I mean, it sounds to me, and this is just an assumption, but it sounds to me that you were hunting behind him almost. He was getting up out of his new bedding and going to this food source, and you weren't even in that path at all. Is that accurate, yeah, or was it something different?
No, that's accurate. I tried to stay hunting him on the same pattern. More on the south end of the woods. I had northern winds, and not knowing exactly till I checked the one camera how far north he was, I didn't want to, blow the hunt and have him win me just by me guessing where he. I just kind of hung back on the south end.
Yeah. Were you trying to hunt him in the mornings as well, and evenings on early season?
Yeah, I did. I think opening day was a Thursday, October 1st. I took that off of work and hunted them in the mornings. All I had was a few evening hunts. I think my son had some football games and stuff in there. So I had a couple morning hunts and maybe one evening hunt or so in there.
Okay. In that first week, though?
Yeah, I ended up shooting him on the 3rd. So, I mean, everything happened.
Okay. So this whole story takes place in 3 days, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So on the 3rd day, then, on the day you shot him, was that a morning hunt or an afternoon hunt?
The morning hunt was the one that my mom said he seen him go in the woods.
Okay.
I was hunting. So that I was really jacked up about.
Yeah. All right. So he made it back to his bed or back to a bedding area at that point. What was your plan then for that afternoon hunt?
Knowing that I was pretty sure he was back in his normal bedding area, and knowing how he reacted when I checked my cameras, that he's set up not really in the thicker stuff that I thought. He's set up more out in the open, and he's 100% watching the access, the normal access that we access, like an old logging trail or something that we access the woods through. And that's 100% what he was betting on, is watching that. So I just went in, a little bit earlier than normal, and I completely went through nastiest, thickest stuff.
Yeah.
Opposite of where he had no clue that I was coming in there from that direction.
So was it like a 180 degree turn for you as far as access routes? Like, did you come in kind of quartering back behind him to your tree stand location?
No, when I normally access, I'm kind of walking right at him, and then I veer off to the right to hunt him. And this time I, veered way off to the right from the get, and walked through the entire property still towards him. And then I knew then roughly where he was bedding, so I could only get, 120 yards or so was probably the safest I felt to get to him. And he was using enough daylight where I didn't really have to push in much farther anyway.
I gotcha. Was this on a tree stand that you already had set, or was this like a new mobile set that you were hanging up there as well?
I was carrying my stand and sticks in on every hunt for this deer.
Okay.
One of the evening hunts I tried in one of my other ones, and the wind was wrong, so I got down and hung mobile, and then I hunted mobile for him the entire time.
Nice. All right. Yep. So this 3 day little, I don't even know what to call it. Like this, it's like a mini season almost, where you're making all these minor adjustments. You're checking trail cameras. You're doing all these things in this first 3 days, and it's led to you to come up to now, which is the 3rd day, the afternoon hunt. It led you to take a crazy access route into this timber. How did you know where to set up at that point without him, with, you know, as far as you're concerned, without him seeing you?
Where I assumed he was betting, I knew he had to be, you know, 40, 50, 60 yards closer. And then, you know, in the winter, after I shot him, I went back. I'm pretty sure I found his bed. He was, there's really not much there. He was betting just to watch the access.
Yeah.
So I knew roughly where I got right on the edge of the thick stuff, and it kind of opened up into some old logging trails and stuff where I actually shot him.
Yeah.
So I set up right on the stuff with a little bit of cover by me. But it's fairly open, actually. Yeah.
Was there a good terrain feature or a trail that was, you know, within shooting distance that was leading down into this? How far away were you from the food source at this point?
I was probably 150, 200 yards from the food.
Okay. And how far past you do you feel he was bedding?
Probably 120.
Okay. So he's traveling almost 300 yards roughly by your stand to get to this to get to the food source. Now, once you get set up, kind of walk us through how that afternoon went. Was there any other deer? Did you have a good feeling you were going to get an encounter with him?
Yeah, I actually said that on the tape too, and actually said it to a couple of my buddies. They said, I'm going to kill this thing, man. I know I'm going to at least see it. But yeah, I was in the spot I needed to be in.
Yeah.
I seen those and stuff, but that was the only buck, you know, just not too long before dark, 45 minutes before dark. He was the only buck to come out of that.
Yeah.
Where he was bedding.
Okay. So, walk us through that, that encounter. Like how long before sunset did you see him? You know, walk us through him coming into shooting range and all that stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I snuck in there. It was fairly early in the day, 3:30 or so. Took my time getting in there. Really took my time picking a tree. I hunted this deer. I was only two sticks high on this deer. There's a lot of deer in Michigan that, I've told you that before. I'm sure there's a lot of deer in Michigan compared to this state.
Yeah.
I had like 12 or 13 does go by me, you know, and we had a good cool front the whole first part of October, which really had the deer moving, but it was like a really light wind. So I was chancing it with the wind. It was blowing from north to south, and he was coming from, you know, he was coming from the south. I guess the wind was northwest to southeast, let's say.
Okay.
And then it was probably maybe an hour before dark, and I finally caught a glimpse of some movement way, you know, over 100 yards through the woods, and I could see legs coming at first, and then he stepped out. I could see his rack, and it was him, no other bucks around. And I was pretty sure that where I picked, you know, I picked the stand where I was going to get a close shot, but you know, I have a couple other pictures where, you know, he could have been like 40 yards away, but I have two or three pictures of him where he should be like 10 to 15 yards away. And he ended up working right down, just, you know, didn't have a clue I was there. Felt really confident, probably because nobody walked in that access trail. And he was just eating a few acorns and picking at some grass and stuff on his way down through there. And he ended up coming by 15 yards.
Yeah.
I had to bleat to stop him. I made a perfect shot near him, like 70 yards. So I could hear him fall.
So you were confident here that he was watching that access route, right? And he didn't see anything. As this deer was moving through the timber, what was his body language like? Was he really observant, or was he just kind of chill and relaxed?
No, he was really, really chill and relaxed. You can shoot one like that, they're not on edge from you or from something else.
Yeah. Which is awesome, right? Because, it's, it just verified that he was in fact watching that access route. He did not see anything coming, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to do what I always do. I'm going to watch this access route. I'm going to get up. I'm going to go walk to that food source, and I'm going to eat until I'm full, and then I'm going to go back to bed. And and you won. And sounds like you slammed him, man.
Yeah. I made a pretty good heart shot on him, a pretty heavy blood trail. And like I said, you could hear him crash even in the video and stuff. He didn't make it very far. You know, he was down like 2 seconds. So.
Yeah. Was this a buck that you had history with throughout the years?
You know, I hear everybody talk about that in podcasts. It just doesn't seem to happen too much. I just, to get history with a deer, you know, just, a deer like this is almost like a fluke. That's why I end up having so many properties and run enough trail cameras. It's like once every 2 years, not a deer like this caliber even, but, you know, sometimes you don't even have any shooters.
Yeah.
On all my property.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So for reference here, is this the buck by a body of water with like a cabin in the background?
Yep.
Yeah. That's and I'm just assuming again, that's a stud for a Michigan deer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big buck.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big buck anywhere, really. What do you score your deer at all?
I do. Yeah. That's a big buck for anywhere. He scored out at 153.
Yeah.
And he's almost basically just an 8 point. He's a 10 point, but his G4s are real short. So
yeah. That's a gorgeous deer. Did you happen to guess an age on him?
I think he was four.
Four.
Be my guess.
Wow. Yeah. It's hard. It's kind of hard to judge a deer's age. You know, like I can look at a deer in the summertime. I can judge his body. You know, there's not that winter coat on. I can say, oh, that's a 4 year old or that's a 3 year old or whatever. But then, you get those early season deer where their neck isn't huge yet, but they're starting to grow that winter coat, and it can almost throw everything off. It, like for me, it could, you know, make a shooter, not a shooter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. You have it rougher, I think. And you really have to watch, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
No, here it's just like,
no one will agree with you, though. No one will agree with you to say that I have it rougher than you.
Well, if you're looking for a particular deer and you're really conscious about the age and everything, yeah. I think you got it rougher. You know, anybody in Michigan, I mean, if they see a 100-inch deer coming, they don't have to think about it. They're probably shooting it.
So. Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned something that I find kind of interesting there, and that is some years you – like you don't really have a lot of deer that keep coming back to your place over and over again. Meanwhile, on the farm that I hunt, you know, there are times where I can watch a deer go 3-4 years. I mean, shit, last year I had a picture of I'm guessing him to be 11 years old, and I have trail camera pictures of him every single year since he was a 4 year old. So that's like what, 7 years? That's more than that, 7 years worth, 7 years worth of trail camera pictures of this deer. And, you know, I gain history. Why do you think that on the properties that you hunt there in Michigan, you don't tend to have like a lot of history or returning customers to a property?
Honestly, I just think it's the hunting pressure. I just think there's enough people hunting in Michigan and enough neighbors and everybody else and shooting them. They just don't make it. You know, like for instance, this one could be one that I had last year. On this property last year, I had four bucks that were right around 120. Now, two got hit by cars and one for sure got shot. And then I heard rumor of another one getting shot. So I just assumed I didn't have any. Yeah, maybe he was 120s last year, like a 128 point is your standard big buck around here, probably.
Yeah,
it could have been one of those, you know, last year, but
yeah,
I don't know. And then one of the ones that were over, you know, my dentist, he said he had pictures of this buck, but he's like a mile away.
Yeah,
so
it's crazy though. It's crazy what you know, you hear stories, even in so my uncle, he lives in Kansas. And he has like evidence of trail camera pictures. So following a creek system, right? Like 7 miles away, 7 miles as far as from one trail camera to the other trail camera. He's got the same deer on trail camera multiple times in the matter of a week out there, which tells me these deer in wider open, you know, wide open places like Kansas, Nebraska, you know, some of the Dakotas are traveling a long ways during the rut. And in Iowa, you know, I feel like they stick closer to a, I don't want to say a core area, but an area. And then they will go out and, you know, once that second half of the rut hits, they'll go out on a cruise mission, right? And they'll go multiple miles, but I don't think it's ever seven. You know what I mean? You know, I have talked with guys who are, on neighboring farms that let's say a mile away where we've shared information with each other. And it's like, oh yeah, I got this buck on camera. Oh yeah, I got this buck on camera. So I don't know. I don't know what it's like up there for you.
Well, like I said, a lot of the neighbors had pictures or had seen it. But you're still talking, when you're talking to a neighbor here, you're talking a quarter mile, half mile away, not, yeah, you know, miles.
Right.
You know, if a deer was going to run a mile, he'd have to cross, you know, he'd be walking in front of 40 hunters, I mean, in like 20 different properties.
Right. Right.
So it's just different, I guess.
Yeah. So, you know, with that said, I want to bounce back to trail cameras, because I feel like you're a little bit like me, where trail cameras play a big role in where we hunt and how we hunt, right? Sometimes for good and sometimes for bad. When you have a trail camera in a specific area throughout, you know, throughout the season, and you're not getting any shooter bucks on it, or you're getting another shooter buck on a completely different part of, or a different farm or wherever, does that trail camera stay in that location for the entire season, or because there's nothing worth shooting on it, you take it down and move it somewhere else?
I usually leave, you know, at least one camera running on each property year round if I can.
Yeah.
Just to kind of throughout that property. But this year, like I said, it was a little bit different. I had so many cameras that I ended up just plastering this area. I mean, that's where I had the biggest buck anyway that I wanted to kill. So I just really plastered it with it.
Yeah. Once you bumped up on those trail cameras, like, do you feel that all those additional pictures that led to sightings or whatever helped you or did not help you?
Yeah, this year on this buck, it definitely helped me.
Okay.
Yeah, people talk like, you know, like I think Cody DeQuisto didn't even use any trail cameras this year. I mean, if you're looking for a particular buck in a state like Michigan, if you're looking, like the ones I'm looking for are rare, really rare, I almost have to run cameras to at least find something that I want to shoot. So,
yeah.
You know how you could do it without.
Yeah, especially in a state where, you know, I don't know, a lot of people say that they want to bump up and shoot a higher caliber deer, whether that's by age or by, you know, antler size. But I feel like a guy would be wasting so much time just hoping and praying he was in the right spot for something, especially in a state like Michigan, right? Like, because what you just shot there is very rare for the state.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, that's, congratulations, by the way. That's a stud animal anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, thanks. So yeah, you know, we do a lot of, I'll do glassing and maybe even some shining and stuff. You know, I still do that all summer long and try to locate other ones or get a feel for an area. But, you know, if you got somebody that has their one good piece of hunting property and they're waiting on a 120 inch buck, I mean, like I said, I got those properties and I only, you know, once every 5 years you have something like that, you know, or a property like this, you know, food plots, I do some work maybe once every 2 years or something, but a deer this big is kind of unheard of, really.
Yeah. Let me ask you a little bit less about hunting and more about you. I had a conversation with a guy the other day and he was talking to me about like, oh man, there's no good deer in my area, or I don't, you know, is like, I don't know. I can't seem to get on any good deer and all this stuff. And he hunts in a really good part of the state. He hunts, on a really good farm that he leases, but as I get to know him and talk to this guy, he starts telling me about like, this weekend I'll go to a football game, or this weekend I'll go play golf, or this weekend I'll do this, this, and this. What is your life like? Because my life is hunting. Like I'm not a member of golf. I don't do softball leagues. I don't do fantasy football. I don't do shit except think about hunting. Like, that's what I do. What, like, are you focused on the one thing, or do you kind of spread your, you know, wings and do a whole bunch of other activities?
Nah, I gave up all my other hobbies. I do some fishing. My son likes fishing, and yeah, really, like, we're talking about big bucks and stuff, yeah. But it's all about freezer full too, you know. That's all we, most part, we don't buy meat really in the store. We don't do none of that stuff. It's all, so I got to harvest enough animals to eat all year too. So
yeah,
but yeah, that's all I, you know, I watch my kids' football game or something like that, but I probably hunt 70, 80 days a year. 90, yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. But
yep, then Scott, you're down.
Yeah. But I think what people don't understand is that locating a good deer to shoot, it doesn't matter what state you're in. Like, locating a deer that, you know, everybody wants to step up and shoot a quote unquote big old buck, big mature buck. Those are the buzzwords, right? Everybody wants to do that. But I still feel like after my 500 plus episodes, right? You know, you hear me and Mark Kenyon talk about it every once in a while on the Wired to Hunt podcast. It's just like, people still aren't doing it. They're going and doing all these other quote unquote fun things. And then when the time comes to actually hunt, they're confused why they're not seeing the deer or locating the deer, when that process, in my opinion, starts right now. Like right now in the spring is when you get the trail cameras out, you start looking for returning customers, you start doing all these things. And then they're just, you know, people are clueless, like, man, I don't understand why, you know, I should have a good deer on the farm, but I don't, you know, when it takes multiple farms and multiple scouting missions and multiple trail cameras and all these other things that you don't have to do. But if you want to locate a really good deer and bump up from what you're normally shooting, that takes a lot of time and effort.
Yeah, I agree. I think some of those guys you're talking to, their definition of want is a little bit different than my definition of want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just, you got, I mean, that's what you got to be about. I don't know. I mean, yeah, you can have a really good piece of, you know, hunt 10 days a year and get lucky, but
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. You to be consistent, you got to really want it. You got to get out there and get after it.
Yeah. And some of the guys that I follow on, you know, on social media, who are the grinders, I call them, these dudes are out all the time. They're checking trail cameras all the time. They're scouting all the time, spring, summer, fall, winter. And these guys, they have backups, right? So it's like, hey, my number one deer, I'm going to go in, I'm going to, you know, try to shoot him. If I can't shoot him because of hunting pressure, someone else shot him, I can't find him, I'm going to go to a different deer. I'm going to locate a different deer and do this. And it's, they're fluid in their approach, to where they just keep going, you know, from one spot to the next spot to a spot that they've scouted. And they have like 10, 15, 20 spots all lined up and ready to go. Now, I know for a lot of guys on the East Coast, that seems impossible with the size of the properties that people are hunting. But man, it's just like, for me, it comes down to how bad do you want it, right?
Yeah. You can't settle for less. I mean, if you want something, go get it.
Right. Absolutely. Everything takes hard. Yeah. And like you mentioned about filling the freezer too, that's something that I personally have been slacking on over the last couple of years, man. I've shot my buck and that's about it. And I really do need to start shooting more does, just for that one reason. And that's to fill the freezer, man.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, we made some venison bacon this year, and we do some venison mixed with pork, different types of sausages and spicy stuff, and then all your burgers, your steaks, and I got a family of four, so I need to put them in the freezer. So yeah. And I got wife and kids helping.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. All right. So kind of shifting here. You hunt a lot of other states, right? Are you mostly hunting out of state for whitetails, or are you hunting for other, like going out west for muleys or elk?
Yeah, this year I went out west again for mule deer and elk. Gotcha. And then I can't get away from the whitetails, you know, especially during the rut type stuff. I don't think I'll ever get that.
Let's keep it in the whitetail realm right now. What were your out of state hunts for whitetails this year?
I went down a week after I shot this one here in Michigan, basically just to check the cameras I had in Ohio.
Yeah.
I just hunted for the weekend, warm, and it wasn't great weather, but just to check the cameras and see. And basically the running the cameras in some of these other states is just kind of a confidence booster. Hey, you know, I got 3, 4, 5 shooters in this ridge system or whatever. So
yeah,
if you're live that far away, it's not like you're going to hone in on stuff by running a few cameras. So
yeah. Yeah. So what's your strategy at that point? Is it let the trail cameras be a starting point and kind of go out from there? Or is it a truly run and gun from the truck, locating fresh sign, terrain, all that stuff every time?
Yeah, this year was the first year that we ran cameras, purposely out of state in Ohio. We run them when we go down hunting. We go down hunting for a week or something. We let some run, but
yeah,
more or less just to see, if I got, 2 or 3 shooters on this ridge, then I'll maybe concentrate my efforts on this ridge. But, I think I ran 14 cameras in Ohio, and there's shooters on basically all of them. So it's nothing like Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you this is all public ground you're approaching in Ohio.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So I guess this year when you went down there and you checked your cameras, I know that the winter or the weather wasn't the greatest, but I mean, did you feel like you had a good enough intel on your trail cameras that allowed you to make some pretty good moves while you were actually there?
I just think the weather wasn't going to really do me any favors for the weekend I was there. Yeah. I mean, it took me a day or so, a couple days to check all the cameras anyway.
Yeah.
That's a lot of walking in hills.
Yeah.
But you could tell, like that first week when I shot the one in Michigan, it was cooler. So it was cooler down there too. I mean, there was a couple bucks down there that you could have shot in daylight too. So,
yeah. So when you first get to a state, and it doesn't really matter what state it is, talk to me about your approach. Like, how do you go in to, because it's not like here in Michigan where you had all these access to the trail cameras that were giving you, I'm going to say up-to-date information, even though it could have been 5 days old or whatever, right? I mean, it's past information, but it's still closer than a week or 20 days or whatever, right? How do you approach stepping into a property and finding a good deer that you want to shoot, and B, like where that quote unquote deer lives?
It's always going to be tougher out of state, where you only got a week or, two different trips, 3 different trips down there where you can hunt. So you just got to go for it. You got to dive in and go for it. I mean, yeah, you're just hunting mobile. You're hunting the sign. And, if, like I said, if the trail cameras show that this ridge system has a few I want to shoot, then I'm going to concentrate there. But I mean, you'll hear other guys talk about, like, Ohio, for instance, like the Exodus trail cam guys and stuff. That's a different, beast down there. There's not a lot of deer in general. It could be tougher to shoot them out of season with regularity, I think, out of the rut. I mean,
yeah.
So,
yeah. So are you going to a different part of, like, from everything I've heard, there's two parts to Ohio. There's the ag country, similar to what we have here in Iowa, and then there's the big woods hill country that they have down there. Which one are you hunting on?
Yeah, I'm in the big woods hill country. You know, I guess if you were on the ag stuff, you could probably hunt that some more similar to the way I hunt Michigan, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're up and moving in the hills, there's not a lot of them. The rut is easier for me anyway, you know, trying to drive 5, 6, 7 hours to go do that stuff.
But, right. Right. So, you check your trail camera. Where are these trail cameras located that gives you that information to, so when you do check them, it's either stay or go.
I have them on terrain features, which is nice because we don't have really any terrain in Michigan. I'll just try to find like a pinch point, you know, around a ravine or something, a saddle or something. And then, or if you can find a scrape or something, obviously that'd be really good.
Yeah.
Some of the spots put in a decent spot and then made some scrape. And I actually had some deer hitting them. So,
gotcha.
But like I said, mostly it's for inventory. And I just wanted to learn, you know, some of the cameras stayed till March this year. So,
yeah. Did you learn anything from those trail cameras in a different environment, in the big wood hill, you know, hill type country, like routine as far as, okay, this ridge is good, the first 2 weeks, and then the rut hits and it kind of tapers off or disappears, and then it picks back up a week later, and any of that information like lead to you making a decision on when you wanted to go the next year?
Yeah, I think I'm always going to try to go during the rut, but after checking my trail camera this year, there was one 10 point, maybe another one that was fairly active in the middle of October on a certain ridge. And then, like I said, that cold front, like I had a lot of pictures, like the 4th, 5th, and 6th, I think, of October. It was cold. I had a lot of daylight pictures then, too. So I think if you wanted to go outside of the rut, you know, if you knew the area a little bit, I think you could do okay if you went outside of the rut. But you'd have, I mean, if you're talking to somebody that's never done it, you just need to go and do it. I mean,
yeah.
You're not out much time. You know, you're out time, but you're not really out much money to go hunt a state like that. I mean,
yeah. So when you go in and you make the determination that, hey, there's a group of deer in this area that I wouldn't mind shooting, how do you know where to set up at this point? And then how long do you give that location until you bounce to a new area?
If it's not getting hunted hard, then I would probably stay there for quite a few days. In the big woods in Ohio, I honestly think you're almost just as better off just to hold tight to a spot, to stand for 3, 4, or 5 days than you are to be mobile. And I wouldn't say that in other instances like Michigan or something.
Yeah.
I think you have to be more mobile. In that big woods, you know, well, for instance, the one I shot was at 1:30 in the middle of the day, you know, and my other buddy that was hunting, he had another shooter come through at 1 o'clock in the middle of the day. So almost thinking sitting on stand, it would be a good, you know, good piece of advice for someone going to a state like that.
Yeah. So. Are you a all day guy? I mean, do you sit all day?
I'm like you. I don't like to, but I've had plenty enough instances in states like that, I don't know, you almost have to.
Right.
It's really hard to do. I don't. And you're waiting for a needle in a haystack to come through. So.
Yeah. Basically. So yeah. The other picture that you sent me, is that an Ohio buck or is that another Michigan deer?
The other one is, that's the Ohio one.
Okay. And that's from this year as well.
Yep. I went to Indiana first though, real quick. We can talk about that real quick.
Yeah.
Like the first week in November, which is, you know, prime rut. Everybody wants to go then, but I'm sure it probably was by you, but it was warm.
Oh yeah.
A warm rut.
Yep.
But I'm sitting here in Michigan. I don't really have anything else I really care to shoot. So I just up and left, you know, I just took some time off work and drove down there, bought a tag. And, I went to some public that I'd hunted before and I checked it. No. And I talked to you before, it was 2018. I shot a good one down there, first time in, whatever. 2019 we went down. That was a rough year. They had EHD down there really bad.
Yeah.
We don't get that in Michigan. But, man, a piece of advice for somebody, don't take that lightly, because I did, and it was, man, it sucked.
Yeah.
2019 down there sucked.
Yeah.
Yeah, we, down there in Indiana, they the signpost rubs are like a cedar tree, a lone cedar tree. Well, we found probably between 2018 and 2019, we probably found, you know, 75 of those that were hammered in 2018. Not one of them was touched in 19. Not one.
Yeah.
So I had a majority of the bigger bucks down there.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I heard I heard other guys talk about that as well.
Yeah, that sucks. So
yeah.
I went down there this year and thought I would just drive through and get out and walk to a couple of the close signpost rubs and stuff in the original property I hunted, and none of them were hit this year again. And I'm sure there's good bucks there, but I wasn't gonna sit around with that. So
yeah,
I just drove Northwest. So
yeah, absolutely. All right, so we have this Ohio deer, right? So when did you actually kill this deer?
I killed this deer, I think, on the 13th of November.
Okay, 13th of November. How long did it take you to kill this deer? How much time did you spend down there in Ohio?
We only had 3 days to go down there before some of the guys wanted to be back for gun season here, which is the 15th.
Gotcha. Okay. So,
Yep. You
know, you mentioned you checked the trail cameras, you realize that there's specific deer in an area that you want to focus on. You go in, you set up, and like, walk us through those 3 days in Ohio.
The normal ridge system that I hunt was getting hammered. I don't know if you noticed that, but this year it seemed like license sales and the amount of people hunting was ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was up in our state, and then Ohio was, there was a ton of people in Ohio this year.
Yeah. I can imagine.
I wanted to go to, but that was getting really hammered. So I just picked a different ridge. I think the first day we got there at night, you know, we got there like midnight, and then we woke up in the morning and it was raining. So we went and checked some cameras, and then we picked spots to hunt that evening. I just picked a ridge that had bucks on it, but didn't have a lot of people on it. And I ended up seeing a pretty nice buck. Really, I probably should have maybe tried to call it in a little closer to get a shot at it, but it was just a big, goofy, huge 4-point on one side, and then a split spike and a brow tight on the other, but a mature deer. I seen that one the first night with a doe, and then a couple other little bucks chasing him around hardcore. I watched some breeder, so I was definitely going back there in the morning, but my stand wasn't in the perfect spot, so I pulled it down and I just stashed it in like a brush pile, and I just had plans of just hanging it in the morning when I come in.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so go ahead.
I was just gonna tell you what I did the next day, but
yeah, go ahead.
I went in the morning and I got to my stand, and there was deer still in that area. So I ended up just hunting, just sitting on the ground in this brush pile by my stand, waiting for some of the deer to clear out till it got daylight. I had one buck walk probably 6 yards from me on the ground, but he was like 100 inches or something. And then once those deer cleared out, I grabbed my stand and I went down in there closer to where that buck bred that doe before, and they, you know, they spent like an hour and a half in there that day, so I know there was gonna be a lot of scent right in that area and stuff. So I set up on that, and then I end up sitting there all day, and
yeah.
I didn't see much a little morning, but
yeah. So kind of describe the terrain here. I mean, is it just big ridge systems running down to a creek that runs down into a bigger river, or how's, like, describe where these deer are living and how they're moving through the terrain.
They seem to, they, man, the deer down there just cruise. Like, we don't get ruts like that in Michigan. All the deer down there, they're cruising, looking for does, or they're with them and they're chasing them like crazy.
Yeah.
I was on a bowl. I typically hunt like where like a steep ravine drainage will come to a head close to the top of a ridge. That's where I'll end up hunting. Usually the runways are really strong there compared to other places.
Yeah.
just like a terrain funnel of some kind. So that's usually where I end up hunting.
Okay.
Yep.
And then, so, I mean, is this a, like, sometimes in a, in an area like this, or, I mean, really anywhere that there's a trail, right? And the trails tell you where, how close you need to set up to this. Are the indicators there, like rub lines or a main trail or scrapes that help you identify locations to hang your tree stands?
Nah, that's a tough, that's a tougher part in Ohio. I don't know what it is, if it's just because it's really big woods or the low deer densities, but there's not, it's not like the super defined trails or rub lines. You don't usually see that too much there.
Yeah.
Some spots, you know, but not very often, no.
Yeah. That's awesome. Which, when I say that, I mean awesome, like, it comes a point where you're just guessing where, I mean, the terrain is awesome. The trails are awesome, but there comes a point where you have to make a decision. And like when you start making those decisions, how far off are you? I mean, were on this particular instance where you shot this buck, were you off by a long ways? Were you off by just a little and had to, adjust just a little bit, or did you nail it with the tree stand set up?
I nailed it. He come through chasing that doe almost the same spot that other one did the night before.
Okay.
So I nailed it on this one anyway.
Yeah. So anyway, so the morning hunt was kind of a bust, but you came back to the same location for that evening, or did you sit all day until you shot this one, like in the early afternoon, right?
Yeah, I was gonna sit there all day. Yep.
Okay.
All right. I never, like 9 or 10 this morning. So.
Yeah. Did you see much movement? You know, the after the morning movement, did you see much movement up until he came through with that doe?
No. I think a buck or a doe. You know, fairly early in the morning. Other than all the deer that were there when it was still dark.
Yeah.
And then it was. And it was, you know, a long stretch of nothing, which happens, but
yeah. And then, so the next deer that you saw was that doe and this buck.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That doe was that doe come over the ridge down a ways with this buck on his tail. And I don't know if I think there was one other one too. And so it's like you're sitting there dead quiet, and then the woods just erupts, and this doe is running for her life.
Yeah.
This thing is right, and there's another one that comes over the ridge. Yeah, they end up going right underneath me, you know, 20 yards underneath me. And I've had it happen too many times down there. You can't get these deer to stop. Whether if they're cruising, they're like zombies, and you can't get them to stop. Or obviously if they're with a doe like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was... trying to stop that thing. I had the loudest bleat you could think of, and I was basically yelling at it, and I didn't think he was going to stop. Like, he got under me and quite a ways past me, and I was at full draw, and I was starting to look back at the other buck to see how big that one was, because this one was on a dead run. I'm like, he ain't going to stop. I'm basically yelling at him. I glanced back. The other one wasn't very big. I looked back, and this one, like, put on the brakes and was stopped for a second, looking back at like the other one. So I had to just hurry up and just guess the yardage and shoot.
Well, it looks like you guessed right, my friend.
Yeah. Not just a gravy shot, but I just had to guess the yardage, and I shot a little low on it.
Yeah.
He was hit hard. Like, he took off running like he was going to chase the doe, and he just couldn't go. He went like 30 yards and he was just stopped there.
Yeah.
His head was hanging real low. And he just didn't, I don't know. I thought for sure I would have nicked the heart, but I must not have. Yeah, this one, there's a little more of a story to the recovery on this one.
So, so you hit him low in the, like, under the heart?
It must have been under the heart, like in the armpit.
Yeah.
Quartering to me a little bit.
Yeah. So you hit some kind of vessels, or did you, I mean, after you shot him, you said he put his head down and he just stood there. How long before he got up and run, or did you watch him fall?
No, he stood there for 10 or 15 minutes. You know, at this point, I had another arrow knock, but he was like 60 yards away, but in some thick stuff.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would have just gave him a follow-up shot. So meanwhile, I'm standing in the stand. The sun is just blaring on me. It's right in the middle of the day. Like I said, 1:30, I shot him. And I'm trying to get another shot at him. So I know I'm standing. I probably stick out like a sore thumb in this stand. I was only two sticks high, but I got some eighters and stuff, so I can get fairly high, actually, two sticks. But I think he started walking, and I was going to try to get a shot, so I ranged it, and it was like 65 yards or something. And I never forget, I know he seen me. His eyes were, like, squinted. He looked at me, and he tried to run up the hill, and he couldn't even, like, he barely ran up the hill, barely, and he had to walk the rest of the way.
Yeah.
So he made maybe like 100 yards till he got to a thicker ridge top, and then I couldn't see him anymore.
While he was standing there with your binos, were you able to see any blood loss coming out of him at all?
Yeah, he was bleeding, and he had something dripping out of his mouth too. So I thought, obviously, when he stood there that long, I'm like, well, I didn't hit the heart, but that's what I thought I was going to end up hitting. But
yeah,
no, I didn't. So I was a little bit nervous, and I always back out either way if I don't see him fall. So
yeah. Okay.
It was a long.
So how long did you wait until you went back and started tracking him?
I just waited till the next morning.
Okay.
Didn't think that I could. Yeah. I mean, you could tell he was hurt, but if I didn't hit the heart, I mean, what else is there to hit if you're below the heart?
Yeah.
So I was nervous.
Yeah.
I'm shooting some giant expandables, but
yeah.
So
you go, you waited until the next morning, you go back, to that location, and was the blood trail easy to follow at that point?
Yeah, the blood trail was fairly easy to follow. It was a little thin where he ran up the hill there. I got up on top of the hill. We started tracking like still in the dark in the morning.
Yeah.
One buddy come with, and we found like a couple different beds there that had some blood in it. And then it finally started getting light enough where we could see decent, and we didn't need our headlamps and stuff. And I found where the blood trail like had like circled back, basically, like he backtraced himself a ways. So then I yelled to my buddy to come up the hill. Well, when he came up the hill, we started following it, and we look up and he's bedded there, and he's still alive, but barely, but he's still alive.
Yeah.
It was crazy. So I put an arrow on, and I went to was going to shoot him, and I was in a bunch of thick stuff. So I took a step back so I didn't hit the branches, and he took off, like, but not great.
Yeah.
So I just quick shot. Like, I don't have my string anchored or nothing. You know, I just shot.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Actually, the funny story is that my buddy thinks I shot one of his tines off, which I very well could have. Who knows? But there when I was watching him for 15 minutes, but when I got to him, he had one of his tines broke off.
That's crazy. So
anyway,
potentially, is this like, seriously, you really think that you an arrow took one of his tines off, or do you think he maybe crashed into a tree and like throughout the night and lost it then?
His tine was on before I got that second shot at him. So, but he went downhill past a bunch of trees.
I got you.
And we looked forever. So who knows? I could have.
Yeah.
So I grabbed another, chased after him, and he finally went into like a pile of briars and stuff, and I was able to get another one in him. But
yeah. Yeah.
I still don't even know what I hit, Dan. Honestly, I shoot people. I don't even care what people say anyway, but I shoot big expandables.
Yeah.
But I got 31 inch draw, and I've got, you know, fast bow, and I'm shooting 75 pounds. I mean, heck, I could probably shoot a freaking Cape Buffalo with my setup. So,
right.
Big expandables. You never know if you're going to have you got to guess the yardage, or you got to stick it back a little bit. I mean,
yeah.
But
yeah,
I don't know if I had a regular tip on this thing, like a muzzy or something, or I don't know if I'd have got this deer, honestly, because I don't really know what I hit.
Yeah.
The diaphragm might have been punctured, hit no heart or lungs or nothing.
So I wonder if it's somehow, I mean, did you find your arrow at all, or was it still like in him?
No, it passed completely through.
Okay. So it almost, I wonder if you maybe got a little trachea, if he's bleeding out of the mouth a little bit, right? And he kind of, I don't know, choked on some blood. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it could be. There was a huge gash like in his leg and his armpit.
Yeah.
So a bunch of muscle damage, but I could have hit some of that trachea.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, congratulations, man. One hell of a year. You know, we didn't even get into your mule deer or your boys buck from this year, but man, really awesome story. I mean, it sounds like you love hunting, my friend.
Oh yeah. It was a great year. I only went to Indiana when I was there.
Yeah. So what's on the agenda for this year?
Drew a good archery tag for Montana for elk.
Okay.
On the agenda, and then I'm sure Ohio and Indiana for sure. And then I don't know. I'd like to try to hit, you know, like a different state every year too, kind of broaden the horizon a little bit. But
yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, congratulations on one hell of a year last year, and good luck on this upcoming season, man.
I appreciate it. You too.
And there you have it. Huge shout out to Kevin. Huge shout out to Wasp, Vortex, Ozonix, and Lone Wolf. Man, please go out and support the companies that support this podcast. That would mean a lot to me. Please subscribe to the Nine Finger Chronicles wherever you download your podcast. Subscribe to the Sportsman's Nation, the Hunting Gear Podcast. Any of your favorite podcasts from the Sportsman's Nation, subscribe. That means a lot to us. And if you're so inclined, go and leave a 5-star review, man. I would really appreciate that. Anyway, have a good one. Good vibes in, good vibes out, and we'll talk to you next time.